morning, church. When Pastor Ray spoke about the Solomons, he pretty much covered half the sermon. I'll do the remaining half. 15th of April 2019, the world watched in horror as the spire of the Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris collapsed in flames. Ancient stones, probably 8 centuries old, people's faith crumbled in front of a global audience. And the French government stepped in and they said, nah, we're going to rebuild this. And they rebuilt. That impulse to survey the ruins and refuse despair, that's Nehemiah's heartbeat. And I like Nehemiah, because Nehemiah is one of the most practically instructive books of the Bible. When you read Nehemiah, you will walk through his calling, his courage, his craftsmanship, and his leadership. The context, the setting. Jerusalem laid in ruins for over 140 years since Nebuchadnezzar's armies razed the city in 586 BC. Generations were born into exile. The great temple had been rebuilt under Zerubbabel, and a remnant had returned. But the walls of the city were still a rubble. And without those walls, Jerusalem was pretty much like a campsite. Anyone can come, anyone can go. The city is exposed, it's vulnerable. And Nehemiah himself was not in Jerusalem. He was in Susa, the administrative heart of the Persian Empire. And he held a good position over there. He was serving as the cupbearer to the king Artaxerxes. And by every worldly measure, he made it. He was safe. He was employed. And he was insulated from all the chaos that was going on in his homeland. And then came his brother, Hanani. Brothers often come with bad news. I've got a younger brother, so I can vouch for that. Nehemiah 1, verses 3 to 4. Those who survived the exile are back in the province and are in great trouble and disgrace. The wall of Jerusalem is broken down and its gates have been burned with fire. When I heard these things, I sat down and wept. Nehemiah did not look away. He did not just offer a prayer and go back to serving wine. He steers where the first bricks of Jerusalem's new wall. And you will see that before Nehemiah laid a single stone, he prayed. He prayed for months, not a day or two, not a week, but he prayed for months. That's because from the month of Kislev to the month of Nisan, that's around 3 to 4 months. And this prayer is a masterclass in approaching God. He worships, confesses the sin of his own people. He appeals to the promises of Deuteronomy And he asked that with specificity. He worked for the king, Artaxerxes, the king of Persia, the most powerful man at that time. And yet, Nehemiah's confidence was not in the king, not in his own diplomatic skills. It was in a God who controls the hearts of kings. He was a man who prayed. He was a man who prayed before he planned, and planned before he moved. And then comes some of the most vivid scenes in the book. I really enjoy this. In Nehemiah 2, 11 to 16. Picture this. Nehemiah has arrived in Jerusalem. And he has not told anyone why he is there. In the middle of the night, he gets up, takes a small group on a secret mission, on a secret inspection of the walls. Just a few trusted men and the silence of a sleeping city. And that's his leadership philosophy. Nehemiah assessed the reality before he announced his vision. He did not just arrive, call a town hall, and spoke some really inspiring words and got. He did not do that. He walked in the dark. He examined the rubble. And only then he spoke. Come, let us rebuild the wall of Jerusalem, and we will no longer be in disgrace. I also told them about the gracious hand of my God on me, and what the hand said, and what the king had said to me. They replied, let us start rebuilding. So they began this good work. Nehemiah 2:17, verse 18. You read this and you will find that there was an honest diagnosis that was done. We are in disgrace. He did not minimize the problem. And the hand of God was clearly visible here. And third, the authority the king gave had practical legitimacy. Nehemiah was a great builder. In fact, he was one of the first civil engineers that we know of. It turns out he was great at managing projects as well. One of the things project managers do is delegate work. You do this, you do this, you do that. And they get paid a lot for that. You go to chapter 3, and you will find that it's one of the most overlooked chapters of the book. That's because people often skim it, because it has a long list of names. But look more closely. You will see that Nehemiah did not just hire a centralized workforce. He assigned a family a section of the wall that corresponded to where they lived. Priests worked beside Sheep Gate. Goldsmiths repaired their homes. The daughters of Shalom helped their father build his stretch. The work of restoration is more powerful when people doing it have some skin in the game. 2022, Pakistan saw a devastating flood. Devastating floods. About 33 million of them were displaced. International communities pitched in for help, to support, to rebuild. And what they found was people rebuilt faster when local families were given the responsibility. And they did it more durably, without waiting for external help. Now, any story is incomplete without their antagonists. And Nehemiah has one. Two, Sanballat and Tobiah. Because they're not just any antagonists. They are the antagonists that you know because you face them every now and then. Whenever you try to rebuild something, they will fire their weapons at you. What weapons? First, they mocked. What are the feeble Jews doing? And then they ridicule, because ridicule is enemy's oldest weapon in his arsenal. They threatened military action, and then they attempted negotiation. They invited Nehemiah to a summit on the plains of Ono. Not once, not twice, but four times. And they fabricated a false letter accusing him of sedition. And look at Nehemiah's response. I like it. When he was mocked, he prayed. When he was threatened, he called his workers, he armed his workers and restructured the workforce. When he was invited for a summit, he sends the same reply. I am doing a great work and cannot come down. And to that false letter, he calls it a lie and keeps building. And what happens next? The wall is built in 52 days. What they thought was impossible for 140 years was done in just a little over 7 weeks. And you see the response of the nations. Ideally, you would want them to celebrate, right? 140 years, nothing happened. You've done it in 52 days. Calls for a celebration. We would have had Pizza Hut if we had done that. But they were afraid. Their response was fear. They recognized something greater than human capability was at work. I like the way this book ends. The walls are up. The city is populated. The law is read. The covenant is renewed. And by the end, when Nehemiah is back from Persia, he finds that this place is in a mess again. The Sabbath is being broken. Mixed marriages have returned. His enemy, Tobiah, has been given a room in the temple courts. That's when you realize the problem was never about the walls. The problem was never about those physical walls. The walls were okay, could be rebuilt. The problem was with the walls in the human heart. It turns out Nehemiah was good at building external structures. You know, he's pretty much like Grant. Grant builds a lot of things. If you have a broken wall, you can call Grant for help. He'll tell you what to do. But if you go to Grant, the problem of a heart, and knowing Grant, he will tell you that that's something he cannot do. He will guide you to someone who can do that. Jesus arrived in a world that was, in a biblical sense, in ruins. Not the ruins of a city, but of a cosmos fractured by sin. What did Jesus do? He did not simply survey the ruins. He entered them. Nehemiah surveyed the ruins at night. Jesus, in the Garden of Gethsemane, sweated blood over the ruins of humanity and in the darkness before dawn. Jesus declared that after the resurrection, all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Jesus does not just draw blueprints for our restoration. Jesus speaks and ruined people rise. The man at the pool of Bethesda was lying there for 38 years. Jesus goes up to him and asks him a very simple question. Do you want to be healed? Of course. And then he commands him to rise. And he does. If Nehemiah's completion of wall in 52 days caused the surrounding nations to lose their confidence, how much more does the resurrection of Jesus overturn every structure of opposition the enemy has raised in your life? In 1 Corinthians 15, Paul makes a staggering claim that the resurrection is not merely an ending to Jesus' story. It is the structural guarantee to our own reconstruction. Nehemiah built external walls. Jesus rebuilds the self, the private, the deepest ruins in us. The addicted life, the anxiety fractured mind, the hardened heart. He's not a project manager. He does not delegate work. Jesus takes the trouble by himself and does the work. What does this mean for us? Do you know your ruins in your life? Find your ruins, walk through the rubble, and find out what's causing that fracture in your life. The habit that you have not surrendered, the grief that you have not processed. The first step towards rebuilding is the courage to ride around the rubble in the dark and seeing it clearly. You have been authorized. The question is not whether you have the permission to rebuild. The question is whether you really believe it. And when you believe it, take it from me, you will face opposition. Sanballat and Tobiah will come. They will throw every weapon they have in their arsenal. But you have the spirit of the one who raised Jesus from the dead in you. The wall will be finished. He who began a good work in you will carry it on to completion until the day of Christ Jesus. God does not abandon half-finished projects. He's not a builder who runs short of funds. He does not grow weary of opposition. The resurrection of Jesus Christ is that commitment that he has begun the new work of creation in you, and he will finish it. I don't know how long it's going to take. 52 days? 100 days? 4 months? I have no idea. But what I know is the ruins will be cleared and that wall will be rebuilt. end of February, I lost my job. 10 years. And then on a Wednesday, I was called and said, go. Friday is your last day. Go to the office, go to the hospital, give your laptop, give your ID card, give your phone, and off you go. Thank you. It was difficult because 10 years, by God's grace, I'd done some pretty good work around there. And everything came to ruins. Everything collapsed in front of me. And God rebuilt. Last week, I received not one, but two job offers. Two really cool offers. One in Auckland, one right here in Morrinsville. I chose the one in Morrinsville. It turns out I am not ready to leave you just yet. What do you want to rebuild? Do you have any ruins in your life this morning that you want God to rebuild? There will be people here to pray for you. Come forward. Get prayed. I can already see chocolate biscuits at the back. God bless you.